Are you ready to talk baseball? Well, step up to the plate. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime. And here's your host, Walter.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Hope you are doing well, staying safe, and being healthy out there. On this episode of the podcast, we will be talking once again with Oakland Athletics beat writer for MLB.com, Martin Gallegos, because outside of the Boston Red Sox, who, by the way, if you haven't noticed, won 9 in a row up until yesterday. They finally lost to the Minnesota Twins, but they won 9 in a row. Outside of the Red Sox, the A's, the Oakland Athletics, who had a historically bad start to the season, have just won 5 in a row. What is going on in Oaktown? We're going to find out. We're going to talk to Martin Gallegos here in a little bit. But welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Hope you are doing well, getting ready for this weekend of action-packed baseball all around the league. And, hey, let's just talk about the White Sox really quick. I mean, Carlos Rondon, out of nowhere, throws a no-hitter. Had a perfecto get broken up by a hit by pitch. No, Michael Conforto did not lean into it. I'm not saying that at all. But Carlos Rondon, he gave up a perfect game. He gave it up in the ninth inning with two outs to go. Hit a batter, and it hit him in the foot. By the way, if you're the batter, he didn't even attempt to move that foot. Are we mad about that? Are we upset that he didn't even try to move his foot out the way so that he can get in there in that at bat, keep the perfecto going? Or did he kind of do it? Did he kind of pull off a Michael Conforto and lean into the pitch a little bit? I don't know. But what a fantastic start for this guy. I mean, he was pretty much given up on and returned to Chicago to throw a no-hitter out of nowhere. In Chicago, they have actually, I want to say that Chicago has three of the last no-hitters that were thrown in baseball. Alec Mills for Chicago Cubs, Lucas Giolito last year in the pandemic, and then also now Carlos Rondon. So I guess three out of the four, right? Three out of the four, because Musgrove obviously threw a no-hitter last week. And he got lit up the other day. I'm just saying. Just because you throw a no hitter doesn't mean that you're the best pitcher in baseball. I'm just saying. No disrespect to Joe Musgrove, but Carlos Rondon, that was the must watch TV of the week with the White Sox. So great stuff there in Chicago, right? In Chicago right now, like I said, Lucas Giolito and Rondon, the last guys for the White Sox to throw no-hitters. And the A's, they have some guys on staff right now that have thrown no-hitters in the recent past. Are any of them getting ready to throw another one? What are we doing over there in Oakland? They got off to a historically bad start, as I mentioned, and now they're one of the hottest teams in baseball. What has transpired in Oaktown over the last couple of weeks? I mean, it's like going on a roller coaster, right? It's seriously a roller coaster of a ride in Oakland. So I gotta talk to Martin Gallegos here in a sec to find out what has changed. What has changed from week one to week two? And obviously, we know baseball, It's a marathon, right? It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. You have to endure these bad runs of baseball. And the A's, to their credit, I mean, they had a rough schedule to start start the year, but you know they were playing really bad baseball. I mean, it looked really they lost all their games. They allowed, I want to say, like 8 runs every single game in that first week of the season. So it was not looking good, but now the bats have woken up. But what has changed? I mean, yeah, the bats have woken up, but what has changed from that first week? We're going to talk to Martin Gallegos here in a little bit. But as I mentioned, the A's, watching the A's, I don't know what it's like, right, to be on a roller coaster of a ride. I mean, to me, a roller coaster was the 2010 World Series run for the Giants. I mean, we were all up and down. Brian Wilson, the torture season, right, in the ninth inning. That was a roller coaster for me that made my heart palpitate a little bit. It was not for the faint of heart. And What is it like to be an A's fan going on that roller coaster? You know what I mean? It's it has to be exciting, but also, you know, you're on the edge of your seat all the time. But do you like that necessarily? Like, don't you just want a guy to go in there? Don't you want your team to go in there and just play drama-free baseball? Or is that not exciting for you? Because if you want drama-free baseball, the Oakland A's is not the team for you. It is not the team for you. Like I mentioned, they are like a roller coaster. Speaking of roller coasters, though, man, a roller coaster of emotions yesterday when I was trying to get some tickets because some tickets went on sale for Disneyland. Disneyland tickets went on sale. Man, that was a whole ordeal trying to get some tickets to Disneyland. And let me tell you, if you guys don't know, I am a huge Disneyland fan, and I'm sure Martin Gallegos is a baseball fan or a Disney fan as well. I'm going to ask him if he got his tickets. But I got my tickets, and it was lucky. Shout out to my sister who hacked the system somehow and got me some tickets. I don't know how that happened. But got the tickets. I'm thankful for it. But then after that, because how it is with the COVID situation, you have to make some reservations. I couldn't for the life of me get in to make a reservation. So I'm panicking. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to get tickets. I wasted all this money. I don't know what's going to happen. And then I find out that the tickets are valid until 2023. So I'm like, all right, well, if I don't get reservations in the next couple of months, it'd be nice to go right now. But if I don't get tickets in the next couple of months, hey, it is what it is. I have tickets until 2023. So I'm chilling. But I would love to get a reservation. So I kept checking, and this was an all-day thing. Like, this started at 8 in the morning. I was in there the crack of dawn. Not the crack of dawn, but my sister, by the way. Shout out to my sister again. She was the real MVP yesterday. She woke me up because I was not going to make it. I was not waking up. I didn't have my alarm set properly, but she woke me up. So shout out to my sister again. She's getting a lot of shout-outs, a lot of love on this one. So I got in there at 8 o'clock because that's when the tickets were going to go on sale. My sister that woke me up, who turned out to be the MVP, she didn't get into the queue until like 8:03. Yet she got in there before me and my other sister, who my other sister was waiting in line since 7:45. How did she get in there? I have no idea. Like I said, she got in there hacking some way. I don't know how she did it, but she did it. So shout out to my sister. But yeah, so I got the tickets. And now I'm waiting for the reservations, and this is an all-day thing. Like I said, I got up at 8 o'clock, got in there, didn't get the tickets until like 2 p.m., and then my sister texted me last night, my other sister, shout out to my other sister, MVP, she got me the reservations at 3 in the morning. She went on there, she got the tickets, she was like, hey, there was no wait, I got you the reservations, you're all set for these dates. Thank you. Thank you, because I was sitting there, I kept checking my phone, and what they do, they don't give you a time limit, which is smart. They don't give you a time limit. They tell you, like, hey, you have more than an hour in line. What's more than an hour? Like, I'm sitting there, like, can you at least give me a minute total? Like, I want to know, do I have, like, 300 minutes to go? Like, what's going on here? Said more than an hour, so that's just infinity at that point. And it kept saying that for like 4, 5, 6 hours later when I would check my phone because I would leave the tab open so that it would continue to roll. But it ended up not doing that. So, and then throw in the fact that the Disney website crashed midway through. So again, shout out to the Disney website shutting down. And I guess A's fans can relate to that too because their system shut down opening week. But we're going to get into all that talking with Martin Gallegos of MLB.com, beat writer for the Oakland Athletics. Coming up next, you are listening to Passion for the Pastime podcast. All right, everybody, Walter here for Passion for the Pastime, and we are speaking with Oakland A's beat writer for MLB.com, Martin Gallegos. How you doing, Martin? How you doing, man?
Hey, Walter, I'm good. Just kind of getting to the swing of things here with the baseball season underway. It's looking like a pretty fun one so far.
Yeah, it's a hell of a roller coaster season so far, right?
Yeah, especially on the A's side. I mean, everyone was kind of freaking out after they started off so bad, and now they're kind of looking like the normal A's that we've seen the last 3 years. So it's just baseball. I mean, we're back to a full slate of games, 162 game schedule. So, I mean, it's kind of to be expected, those highs and lows a little bit more than we saw last year.
Yeah, but it was really low at the beginning of the season. Like, A's fans were panicking at the beginning. It was a historic bad start to the season. But we'll get into the A's stuff really quick, man. I want to ask you, because I know you're a Disney fan, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I got a lot of Mickey Mouse items. I wear a Mickey Mouse hat to the games a lot. So that's kind of how people identify me a lot.
Oh, man, I got to ask you, were you able to get some tickets yesterday when they went on sale?
You know what? I didn't even try because I know I'm not going to be able to go for at least a while. So, you know, I had an annual pass before this all happened. And, you know, I saw a bunch of friends and stuff posting the memes kind of the wait times and the recalculating and all that. I was like, I'm not going to bother. I'm just going to wait until things die down a little bit. And, you know, then I'll try to make a trip up there when I go to LA or something.
Man, you did a good decision. I'll tell you that, because it was hectic. It was more hectic than the A's season, man. I was in there. I'm a huge Disney fan, by the way, if you can't tell already. I got in there at 8:00. I was not able to get into the queue, and then the recalculating, and then it says more than an hour. It's like, well, can you give me a wait total? Like, I want to see like 300 minutes. That's fine. I know it's a long time, but don't give me more than an hour. Like, I don't know what that means. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was an ongoing thing yesterday. I ended up getting some tickets. So, nice. So shout out to my sister for doing that for me. Cause she hacked into the system somehow. I have no idea how she got the tickets, dude. I have no idea. Yeah. But then, also because you have to get the tickets and then also get a reservation. So I wasn't able to get a reservation either, but then shout out to my other sister, giving some love to my sisters here on the podcast. They, she got me some, the reservations at like 3 a.m. So I was like, oh, cool. I'm all set, man. Wow. So yeah, good choice by you to avoid that whole situation.
Yeah.
It was an all day thing. But I mean, hey, you are dealing with the A's, their roller coaster of a season. What has changed? What has changed from when the A's were bad to now where they're winning 5 straight?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few factors. I mean, obviously they had a pretty rough schedule to start. I mean, they started out against Houston and the Dodgers, and then Houston again in Houston. Which is, you know, tough for any team to go through. And, you know, they started out kind of slow out the gate as far as everything. I mean, they weren't hitting. I mean, they were leaving a lot of runners on base. And you could clearly tell the frustration was mounting in the offense. I mean, they just couldn't get anything going. They were dealing with some injuries. Ramon Laureano was hurt for a stretch. Sean Murphy was hurt for a stretch. Matt Olson was out for a few games. So, I mean, it was just kind of a bad mix of everything going wrong at the same time. The bullpen was just not able to keep short deficits intact. They were just letting things get out of hand. So it was all going bad for those first 6 games. And then something seemed to click kind of when they went to Houston towards the back end of that 10-game stretch they had to begin the season. They went to Houston, picked up that, you know, first win. Well, really, the walk-off win against the Dodgers kind of set the table, you know, to end their homestand. But they did lose the first game in Houston. But after that, they seemed to kind of turn it around. They flipped the switch. Sean Manaea turned in a quality start. And it kind of set the string of improvements from the starting rotation. Guys like Frankie Montas, Chris Bassett started going well. And the offense really has picked it up lately. I mean, Ramon Laureano has been on a tear. He's leading the league in stolen bases, and he's kind of been a spark plug for them. Jed Lowry is just doing incredible things for a 37-year-old. Matt Olson is hitting some bombs again. And Matt Chapman slowly but surely seems to be turning things around and looking like the Matt Chapman that we saw before his injury last year. So, kind of things, everything really has just turned around. I mean, they were doing so bad on every facet of the game that you kind of just expected that they weren't going to be that bad all year. And now we're kind of seeing the A's that we expected to see at the beginning of the season now.
I mean, did anyone really expect Jed Lowry to do what he's doing? Like, what's going on with Jed Lowry and the A's right now?
It's nuts. I mean, it's hard to explain. I mean, we asked Bob Melvin about it, and he can't explain it. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, to go from the last 2 years not doing anything, I mean, inactive, he played like 9 games over the past 2 years, had a knee injury, which, I mean, when you're an older player going through knee stuff, you kind of figure, okay, this might be the end of the line for you. It's kind of hard to regain your strength there. And he had off-season surgery on the knee, a surgery that he had wanted when he was with the Mets, and the Mets were kind of advising him against doing that. They wanted him to just rehab it and not get surgery, and you know, you saw what ended up happening. He didn't play at all. So, I mean, he gets no offers really this offseason except for the A's, because they know him from the past two stints. Billy Beane gives him a call and brings him in on a minor league deal. You know, the A's know what he could do when he's healthy. They were just kind of waiting to see how much he had left in the tank and how the knee was doing. I mean, he showed up in camp right away. Got a little bit of a late start to Cactus League play, but once he started playing, I mean, he looked like the Jet of old. I mean, he was hitting doubles everywhere, hitting line drives everywhere. He was playing, you know, solid defense. I mean, he's never been an amazing defender, but he's always been pretty solid with the glove, and he still looks the same from when we saw him in 2018. And at the plate right now, he's just on fire. I mean, this is as good as we ever saw him in his career. So I don't know if that's sustainable, what he's doing right now, because that's just crazy. But he certainly has been a major impact in the middle of that lineup. And just beyond that, he just is kind of a good influence for the other hitters in that clubhouse, because he's so knowledgeable. I mean, if you talk to him about hitting, I mean, he's got so much knowledge from all the years that he's spent in the league that he's been able to kind of rub that off on the younger guys on the team, guys like Chapman, Olsen. Mark Canna kind of touched on it last night when I asked him about it. He just always going up to him, asking questions. And so he's been just such a big impact for them on and off the field. And I mean, it was unexpected. I mean, nobody thought he would be this good. We thought he'd probably at best be a platoon guy, maybe get some days off here and there. He's appeared in every single game so far, and he hasn't shown any signs of letting up. So maybe he's just those 2 years of rest have kind of given him fresh legs, and he's ready to go.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's what the story is with Jed Lowry and the A's. Nobody can really put their finger on it, but he is tearing it up. I think is he leading the team in batting average also? Like, because a lot of guys got off to slow starts this year.
Yeah, I think he's up there. He's leading the team in batting average and maybe even RBI. He's here like 12 in the last five games or something like that crazy. So he's certainly one of their key cogs right now. Him and Laureano have really kind of been the spark plugs for them early on.
Yeah, and that's another guy, Ramon Laureano, leading. I think he's leading the majors, or maybe not leading the majors, but he's definitely leading his single stolen bases total against multiple teams. What is the uptick in stolen bases? Kind of a little bit of a throwback. You don't see as many guys stealing bases anymore in today's game.
Right, yeah, and especially with the A's. I mean, back in the day with Ricky Henderson, yeah, but I mean in the Bob Melvin era, pretty much. We never really saw a lot of guys stealing bases. Coco Crisp led the league not too long ago, but after that, they really have kind of gone against stealing bases. It really just hasn't been part of their game. But Ramon Laureano's always had it. He's always had it in his back pocket. I think he stole like 43 bases with the Astros in their minor league system not too long ago. And I think the A's just know that that's part of his game, something that he could do well. And I think they're giving him a little bit more leash there. And obviously, you know, you see the numbers, he's leading the entire league right now in stolen bases. And part of it, I think, has just been his hunger to get better in every aspect. I mean, the guy just never stops working to improve everything, whether it's hitting, defense. I mean, you saw last year, he finished a finalist for the Gold Glove. And we've seen the power he has. We've seen his ability to hit, his arm. I mean, everybody knows about the arm. And the speed has always been there. He just hasn't really translated it to the base running. But this year with Elvis Andrus joining the team, he kind of mentioned early on in spring training that he was kind of picking Elvis's brain about stealing bases. And, you know, Elvis is a good guy to do that. I think he stole about 300 bases or so in his career. And not too long ago, stole about 30 or 40 in a season. So he knows a lot about stealing bases. And he's been kind of a sponge with Elvis. And it seems to have been rubbing off. I mean, I don't know if that's the only factor there. I think he's probably improved his ability to kind of read pitchers a little bit more, but that also could stem from the conversations he's had with Andrus. But I mean, overall, I mean, this guy's looking like a guy who could potentially be an all-star. Bob Melvin told us he thinks he could be an all-star this year. And I mean, the way he's going right now, I mean, I think if he keeps this up, certainly he's going to have a case. If the A's are playing well and then he keeps putting up those numbers in the middle of the order.
Yeah, the Laureano, I mean, what he's doing, whatever he figured out, talking with Andrus, whatever he figured out, just keep doing it, right? The fans are loving it. And how many stolen bases does he have on the year? Is it eight? Is that his total right now?
Yeah, I think he's at eight right now.
Do you think that he can get over 40, over 50? Is that what we're talking about here, or should we slow our roll?
I think so. I mean, I asked Bob about it yesterday. Bob Melvin, he kind of tried to downplay it a little bit, like, you know, I don't know if he's going to be doing this all year, so. I mean, I don't know if it'll be like outrageous numbers, but I think 40 and 50 is definitely, I mean, easy mark to get to. I mean, he's certainly got the talent for it. He's got the speed for it. And, you know, I think as the season goes along and you know, there's always opportunities late in the game where you need a stolen base. he's certainly going to get the green light because he's shown so far. I think he's only been caught stealing maybe once. So, I mean, he's shown that he can just, he's not just out there, you know, running wild. He's got a plan out there, and he's taking advantage of the opportunities that present themselves.
We are talking with Martin Gallegos, beat writer for the Oakland Athletics for MLB.com. Now, we've been talking about the offense quite a bit. Let's switch over to the pitching staff here. And in baseball, right, we've had two no-hitters in about a week. Joe Musgrove with the Padres and Carlos Rondon with the White Sox. Do you see anybody? Because, I mean, there are some guys on staff that has had a no-hitter in recent years. Do you see anyone on this current A's pitching staff that could possibly join that no-hitter club in 2021?
Well, I've always thought Jesus Luzardo is a guy who could do that. I mean, his stuff is so electric, but, I mean, through three starts this year, he's really been up and down. Kind of the same thing we saw last year in his rookie year. Just he's shown flashes of his dominance, but then he kind of hits a wall where, you know, maybe second, third time through the order, he just has trouble adjusting to hitters. And you know, it's resulted in big innings, and his last start against the Diamondbacks was pretty bad. So, you know, once he puts that stuff together, I think he's a guy who certainly can do it. I mean, we've seen Manaea throw a no-hitter before. Frankie Montas, another guy who's pitching tonight. Frankie Montas, when he's on, he can throw a no-hitter, I think, easily. I mean, his stuff is just so dominant. That fastball up in the high 90s, almost touching 100, and that splitter has been so dominant for him. He's a guy who could easily throw in as well. I think Montas and Luzardo, kind of based on their stuff, you feel like they have a really good chance to do it. But obviously, Mike Fiers is coming back, and he's already got two under his belt. So, I mean, who knows? That guy, you never expect a guy like him to be able to throw a no-hitter, but he just does. So sometimes it's kind of random, you know, just you're facing the right team on the right night. And certainly at the Coliseum, pitchers are more comfortable here. So, I mean, any guy on a given night can pitch a no-hitter at the Coliseum. I think it's built for pitchers with the foul ground and such deep outfield, especially at night when balls are kind of dying out.
So what I'm hearing is I need to go to the Coliseum more because I'm more likely to see a no-hitter there than any other ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, it's the place to throw no-hitters, apparently.
I'm hoping to get out there really soon, man. I'm really hoping to get out to a ball game. I haven't been able to yet. But planning on going to a couple of Giants games, maybe some A's games here and there. That's the good thing about living in the Bay Area. You got two teams to pick from to go see some baseball, especially if you're a diehard baseball fan. So I got to get out to the yard, man. But the fan base for the A's, they have not disappointed. I mean, you open up that series. We've all been waiting for it for the Astros to be on the road, and the A's fans did not disappoint. How are the A's treating AJ Hinch in coming to Oakland? Is there any trolling going on with this one, or is it kind of not as big overblown because it's not the Astros?
Well, I mean, I know there was a dude in front of the press box kind of heckling Hinch all night, but for the most part, I think it was pretty tame. I think the Astros series was definitely, I mean, nonstop. I mean, all every single game, just from start to finish. Guys, you know, booing and yelling cheaters or the banging of trash cans or whatever, simulating the sound of a trash can. So it was just constant in that series. This one, at least for last night, it was a little more tame. Maybe as the weekend goes along and more fans come in, maybe you hear a little bit more heckling towards AJ Hinch. But I mean, AJ Hinch actually had a kind of a statement, or I think he was asked about it yesterday, and actually talked about apologizing to Bob Melvin about what went on. So, I mean, AJ Hinch is the guy who played for the A's, and he's a Bay Area guy, so maybe there's a little bit more, you know, sympathy towards him. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, the players had a big part in that. Obviously, Hinch had a part in it too, but I think there's a little bit more, you know, sympathy towards AJ Hinch just being a Bay Area guy and being a good friend of Bob Melvin's, and Bob actually talked about it too. You know, it's kind of in the past, and they've kind of talked about it, talked over, and they still remain, you know, on a good terms and, or, you know, somewhat friends. So I don't think it's such a big deal, but when the Astros come back again, I mean, it's probably going to be a zoo once again, just like the first series.
Oh yeah. I definitely have to make it out to that series when they come back because it, it sounded crazy. And I just have to witness it. You know, I have to see how it all goes down. AJ Hinch, you know, he paid his dues, right? Cause I think that's the other part of it where AJ Hinch, he did get suspended, right? He got fired. He lost his job, but he got suspended from the game of baseball. the Astros players didn't necessarily get all those things. So maybe there's a little bit of a different aspect when it comes to AJ Hinch, but I think he's a good baseball mind for sure. Bay Area remembers him also. So yeah, it might be a little bit different. But man, it was funny. Did you see that last week when he visited Houston, he got a video tribute and a standing ovation when he showed up in Houston. Do you see that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a weird dynamic, man. It's just odd. I mean, you go to Houston and the fans are loving. It's like they kind of embrace the hate from the other fans, and they just kind of go all out even extra now this year, it seems like, whenever team goes into Houston. So it's going to be a fun season just seeing kind of the back and forth with all the teams, especially the teams that were affected by the Astros in that season. I mean, it's going to be crazy when they go to, anytime they go to LA or whatever, New York, whatever, those fans are really going to, I think, let them have it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I want to see when they go to the Bronx, man. I want to see how that happens. Yeah. I don't know. Is that even on the schedule for them? Are they playing AL East?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I would have to look that up. That's certainly a must watch.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Really quick, Martin, before I let you go, man. Yesterday was Jackie Robinson Day, right? And I believe, are the A's celebrating it again today? Because not all teams were playing yesterday. So I know the teams that weren't playing yesterday are playing or wearing 42. Right. Are the A's participating in that as well, or are they kind of past that because they played yesterday?
Yeah, I think they're still celebrating. I'm not sure if they're wearing the 42 jerseys, but I know they'll still be kind of doing the tributes and all that again. I think they said it would be a 2-day thing, so I think they'll be doing it again tonight.
Okay, perfect. So Jackie Robinson Day. I mean, really quick, what does that mean to you when you think of Jackie Robinson? And you know, being that you are Latino, I mean, how does that resonate with you?
Yeah, man, I think it's kind of like the shirt, like you saw the T-shirts everyone had last night, kind of breaking barriers. I mean, that's what I think of. I mean, without him, I wouldn't be in this business, and I know a lot of us wouldn't be in this business. So, just such a powerful figure, and a guy who really early on in my childhood, I learned a lot about just being a baseball fan, and you know, in school and all that, you read books and you kind of know who Jackie Robinson is, and then growing up, you kind of learn more about him, and especially in these times where, you know, kind of, you know, systemic racism is more at the forefront of the national conversation, you kind of look back at the influential people who have helped get us to this point, to where we can, you know, kind of make change. And Jackie Robinson is, I mean, right up there. I mean, the guy went through so much, endured so much to enable, you know, all the great players that we see in the game today, whether it's Latino players, Black players. You know, Jackie Robinson was the guy who paved the way. So, I mean, it's always cool to honor him. And I know it's a special day for a lot of players. And I think what the Players Alliance is doing with donating money to the Black communities and kind of the inner cities, I think it's really cool. And I'm glad that it was kind of spotlighted last night and probably will be today as well in terms of the work they're doing in the community. I know, it's, you know, communities like Oakland and the Bay Area is certainly very diverse, and a lot of, you know, Latino and Black kids out there who are kind of struggling to come up with the funds to play the game. And I'm hoping that, you know, they can kind of help, you know, produce a way to help them get involved in the game a little more, because I know for me growing up, you know, I loved baseball and it was kind of easier to get involved in it. And nowadays, you know, with the prices for equipment and all that, it's kind of gone away. So, you know, I'm glad that, you know, Jackie Robinson's a day that can highlight all that with the players are doing with the Black community. And hopefully, we get baseball popular again in those communities and get a little bit more diversity in the game in terms of, you know, the players that are in the league.
Now tell us a little bit about the Players Alliance. Those of us, that may not know, what the Players Alliance is and what they represent. Tell us a little bit about that and a little bit on the story of some of what players were doing yesterday, around the league, including, Tony Kemp was one of those as far as their salaries go. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I think they formed the Alliance sometime last year. So it's relatively new, but they've done a lot in a short amount of time. I think a lot of it was sparked, honestly, after, you know, what was going on last year in the country with George Floyd and everything. And kind of, you know, a lot of the Black players kind of stood up and said, hey, you know, we got to make a change here. We have a voice and, you know, we can make an impact in the world with our voice. I mean, a lot of people look up to those guys. So, it's good that they kind of organized and you know, it's got a lot of members now, and they've been doing a lot over the winter. They did these pull up tours in inner cities where they kind of donated gloves and bats to kids in need, so they can, you know, come up with a way to play the game. I know they're trying to come up with ways to get more coaches, more diversity with coaches in those inner cities. Find a way to get them to kind of lead the youth and get the game out to reach more areas that kind of are, you know, in need of, you know, something to do to keep them off the streets and whatnot. So they've been doing a lot. And, you know, yesterday Tony Kemp was one of many players around the league who donated their salary to the Players Alliance so it could go towards more of those activities like the ones I've just mentioned earlier. And I think Chad Pinder also was one of those days who donated their salary. There might have been more, but those are the only two that we knew for sure did. But around the league, a lot of players donated their salary for that day, and it's really cool to see because you know, they're trying to make a change, and you can see the effort that they're making. So it's really cool to see how much it's grown in such a short amount of time.
Great stuff, Martin. I appreciate you coming on, man. And take care. Enjoy the game this weekend. Maybe I'll catch you out there, and maybe I'll catch you in Disneyland at some point.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Hopefully, I get a connection, get a ticket out there, something.
All right, man. You take care.
All right, man. See ya.
And again, that was Martin Gallegos, Oakland Athletics beat writer for MLB.com. Go ahead and give him a follow at Martin J. Gallegos on Twitter to get all your Oakland A's news, up-to-date news, because the A's, they are streaking right now. Follow them while it's hot. So I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Martin Gallegos. He's a great dude. It's always a pleasure to have him on the podcast. And you guys, get out to the Coliseum. Go see them take on the Tigers. Go see AJ Hinch. Heckle him if you want. Applaud him if you want, whatever you want to do. But get out to go see some ball this weekend because the weather is just so beautiful. Why would you want to stay indoors? But be safe. Be safe. Wear a mask. Be safe. Social distance. You know what I mean. But get out to the Coliseum. Go see some baseball. And we'll talk next week. We got a lot of baseball coming up. And I'll talk to you next time. Hope you enjoyed it. Take care. Be safe. Talk to you then.